thank you so much. We've got this is an incredible panel of representatives here, agents, managers, and I can see many, many, many directors in the audience. This is going to be trying to get through as much as we can in the next 40 minutes. The first thing I want to do is just have each of our people here introduce themselves, give a quick idea of who they are and who they work for and what they do. We'll start with Sean all the way down at the end. Go for it.
Yeah. Hi, guys. My name is Sean Woods. I'm a lit manager and development executive at a company called Forward. We're based in Los Angeles, but we have offices in Nashville, people in New York, and Melbourne as well. At our company, we represent actors, writers, directors, producers, musicians, etc. onwards. But my focus is very much on the film and TV side.
And go for it, Lee.
And my name is Lee Dinsman, and I'm the head of the literary department and a managing partner at an agency called APA in Los Angeles. We represent artists across the entire spectrum of the entertainment business, writers, directors, IP, factual, musicians, for touring, comedians. My focus is more on television. We package and sell a lot of shows, represent a lot of writers and directors. Some of the shows that we packaged recently include Double Murder Squad, which is on Stars All Rise, which is on CBS, legacy shows like 24 and Grimm, and so forth. We have offices as well in Los Angeles, which is where I'm based, Nashville, obviously, for music, New York, Atlanta, and London.
Awesome, thanks. And next up is Jordan.
So my name's Jordan Drage. I am based in Vancouver. I moved out here from Halifax 8 years ago, and I've been working with Integral Artists for 7 years. It's been around for 7 years. And our thing is Canadians, wherever they live, so we also have an office in Toronto, and we work extensively in LA with some of these lovely people. So.
Well done.
Thanks. All right, Glenn.
My name is Glenn Coburn. I own a company called Meridian Artists. It has offices in Toronto and Los Angeles. We represent authors, screenwriters, directors, talent, and key creatives.
Great. And Evan, go for it.
I'm Evan Piok. I work at Verve. We have offices in just Los Angeles, unlike everybody else. We're exclusively a literary agency, meaning we represent just writers and directors. We have a small unscripted and publishing department as well, but lit is our primary focus. I'm on the television side, and I focused almost exclusively on representing directors.
Awesome. So we have a lot of things to go through, but I wanted to get one lightning round out of the way. So this means each of you answering the same question very quickly. just to get the ball rolling, one of the most common questions we get, and I'm sure you get it all the time, is what are you looking for when you meet a director? Which I know is a vague thing because each director is different, but I'm just curious, you guys, when you sit down for that first meeting with a director that you know nothing about, what are some things, and try and be different from each other, which I know will be tough, what are some things that you are hoping they say or things that you're hoping they present that get your attention? We'll start with you, Sean.
I'd say passion and communication. Obviously, if someone's passionate about something, that should come through. But also, as a director, you have to be able to communicate with not just actors, but everyone else, all the HODs. And so if you can communicate with me, I trust that you can communicate with everyone else.
Go for it, Lee.
I look for vision and point of view. Somebody who has a unique insight into expressing the story of the human condition visually. When I see something that really sort of stands out, that's what indicates to me that somebody has a burning desire and an ability to execute a particular point of view that can help illuminate what our lives are all about, and that's what I look for.
Sweet. Jordan?
Like to look for people that have kind of taken that first step, and that can mean a lot of different things, but usually if I can start making the pitch before I've met you, I'm gonna be in.
Yes, 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 yes. We're all gonna be in agreement on all this stuff. But I'll add to it, if you're in for a meeting already, we've already, the creative, the talent, we already believe is there. So the meeting is really about professionalism. getting a sense that you are going to be a committed member of the community, a committed member of the tune into your creativity, that you're going to show up early, that you're going to leave late, that you're going to give a good meeting, all those kinds of things, also very important to us.
I agree with what everybody else has said, especially passion and voice. Be excited about what you want to do. Be excited about the stories that you want to tell and what you bring to those stories.
Awesome. So I have a question for you, Evan. One thing I've been wondering to help with all the directors in the audience is, where do agents find directors? You rep a lot of directors, like, mm-hmm. Where do you find them? How do they come to you before, you know, like, is it just people recommending them, or are you out there searching for them? What are the ways that, you know, you find the talent?
There's a lot of different ways. There's kind of the tried and true method of they're represented by a manager, they're represented by a Canadian agent, another British agent, foreign agent, whatever it may be, and they're looking to break into the U.S. system. They come recommended that way. We get recommended people by networks and studios. We get recommended people by existing clients. And yeah, we're out there looking at stuff. We look at films playing at festivals. We look at stuff and episodes airing on TV. I've signed people where I've seen their episodes and looked them up and they're unrepresented. The good news is there is no right way, or there's no wrong way to get representation. The good news is there's also no right way. So people come from all over.
Awesome. Anything else anyone wanted to add to that of how you find people, or does that pretty much cover it? Pretty much. Lee, I had a question for you, which was just sort of giving a sense of the industry and how it's changed over time as far as the opportunities for directors, and specifically what might be unique about right now as things are kind of changing, and what the industry is looking for compared to what it was looking for just 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Well, I think, on the one hand, we're in what I would call an expanding universe of emerging platforms, all of which demand original content in order to distinguish themselves, to distinguish their brand, in order to attract people and eyeballs to view their shows, so to speak, okay? And I think, you know, streaming has become like the Big Bang, so to speak, in terms of original content now, right? Because it's not like I'm watching television or I'm watching a motion picture. It's like I'm watching a screen. And that screen could be that 70-inch TV in your living room. It could be your iPad. It could be your iPhone. It could be, the local, movie theater. So in that sense, it's an expanding universe. At the same time, it's a time of enormous disruption going on in our business, right? Because with new technologies come new business models, and that kind of upends everything. It upends business models and how people get paid, and what kind of equity they may retain in the things that they create, and so on. So there's that issue, and I think obviously as our society becomes more inclusive, so to speak, there's a real desire to reflect that, obviously, in terms of the stories that are being told and also the people who are telling those stories. So I think you've seen on both the Canadian side and the American side a real commitment to try to make the people behind the camera, the people who are being hired, more balanced, right? So you're going to see more diverse voices. You're going to see more female voices. People maybe who have been traditionally somewhat underrepresented, having those kind of opportunities. At the same time, it does create, challenges for, people traditionally who have had those sort of jobs. So we're all sort of, exploring, if you would, this new world that we live in that, has its challenges on the one hand, but I think at the same time, enormous opportunities on the other hand.
Awesome. Sean, I was curious, you're our one manager on the panel, and a lot of people, I get asked, I have a manager and an agent, and one of the questions I get asked all the time is, what is the difference, and what are the benefits of having a manager? When do I need a manager? Do I get a manager before I get an agent? Do I, so kind of give us an idea of what management means and how that's different from an agent.
Yeah, well... My perspective on it, first of all, there's a ton of gray area between the two, or there's a ton of an overlap. The analogy that I heard explained to me that resonated which might not resonate with a bunch of artists, but if you're the CEO of your company, your brand, an agent is going to function like a CFO, the chief financial officer, and their job is to make sure that you've got money coming in and opportunities on the table, while your manager is going to function like the COO and the chief operating officer, and that's doing everything from making sure like the lights stay on and the elevator's working in the building to like big time long-term strategy. What are we doing not just tomorrow or a year from now, but what's the overall vision? The COO and the CFO have to work hand in hand to help complete the vision for the CEO and make sure the company runs smoothly. So I like that analogy. I don't know if that resonates or that works.
What's a CFO?
Chief Financial Officer. Yeah, exactly. What's money?
And then what do you think, like, traditionally with the clients you have and stuff, are you coming on board before they have agents, or is it 50-50, or do they get agents and then they get management once their career grows to a certain level?
It's both. It's 50-50. There's times we'll find somebody a voice and they need a little bit of work or a little bit of development, and we want to help them get there. There's times when someone comes to us and they have an agent, but they just need help focusing because they've got 20 ideas, and the agent's like, come to me with the thing. Like, come give me something I know I can go sell tomorrow. And we work hand in hand. So it's both ways.
And you have more of a hand in the development of the ideas as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. And one of the things that we love to do is read multiple drafts and, you know, help make things better. One of my colleagues worked at CAA as an agent for a long, long time, as a packaging agent. And it got to the point where they were just like close the deal and like move on. He's like, but I can make this better. Like, we, you know, the idea, the reason we're all in this business to begin with is because we get excited about content and we want to make good things and put good things out there. So when he transitioned from being an agent to a manager, he was just able to really lead into that side of him and engaging early with material and ideally shaping it so, A, it does sell and it sells faster, but it's ultimately a better product.
Now, that isn't to say all our agents aren't heartless sharks, but...
Yes, I don't want to have a rebuttal to that. Maybe...
Please do.
Maybe that's the CA philosophy, how to do things. And I don't want to speak for everybody on this panel, but I think agents, passionate, committed agents, are always looking at the big picture and the long-term view of a client's career, right? And one thing that I've certainly learned, just in terms of the representation of artists, is that sometimes, you know, careers are made not on what you say yes to, but more often on what you say no to, you know? Particularly when you start to have choices in your career. And then those choices are, you need somebody, and it could be the manager, and it could be the agent, and in the best case scenario, it's the two of us working together as a team to look at what are the auspices, you know, who else is involved with this project? Who's the producer? What's their track record? Who's the writer? What's the actor? What kind of heat does the actor, you know, have? Who's the studio that's making it? What other projects does the studio have in development that might be competitive with this particular project? Or if it's a television show, same thing. How many other similar series do they have in development? Or do they already have something on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock that can conflict? So, you know, a good agent is going to really sort of, you know, take a look at all of those, you know, particular elements, and again, with the lawyer, with the manager, hopefully, you know, advise the client what may be the best choice, and always with a view to the big long-term picture.
Awesome. Jordan, I was curious, you're our one Vancouver agent.
Can I add something?
Yeah, go
just
for it.
Because there's probably I want to add some clarity to one thing. So in Canada, there's no separation between agents and managers. We have, everyone in Canada calls themselves agents, and if you're out looking for representation in Canada, there are agency agents and there are managerial agents. There are agents that have 120 clients and it's them and an assistant, and there are agents that have 40 clients that spend a lot of time with them and they have a lot of support from their agency. So when we talk about agents and managers in Canada, you're really looking for an agent because we all call ourselves that. But there are different styles, and you should be very aware that one agent is very different than another, even inside agencies that have multiple agents in them. The second thing that I wanted to clarify was that Meridian Artists acts as we are an agency in Canada, because that's what we call it, but we're very much on the managerial side of agency in Canada, and we are a management company in Los Angeles. We have an office down there, we have staff down there, and we represent our clients cross-border to make sure that they feel represented across North America. And so we are in both of those markets. So I just wanted to make sure.
Cool. That was cool. Well, that was one of my questions. So why don't we jump forward to that? And I'll come back to you, Jordan, in a second. But talk to me about, Glenn, about sort of what it's like for a Canadian, especially once they're repped by you, sort of especially what it's like to try and work across the country. It's generally hard. And we get told a lot as directors that you can only work in the place where you pay your taxes. And that sometimes seems to be true and sometimes isn't and can be kind of siloing. And you represent people across the whole country. What's it like for a Canadian to try and work across the country and then try and transition?
So cross-country is very true. If you're a director in BC, you're going to have a very difficult time getting work in Ontario. The tax credits are very much a dominant factor in picking the directors that they're going to go for. Now, you may hear exceptions to that, but just to be fair to everybody in this room, that's going to be John Fawcett and David Wellington and Andy Makita and Jordan Canning and all these other people who are kind of at the top of the game right now. But when they're kind of working with the aspiring directors, you're very much siloed by the province that you're in. So cross-country work is very difficult. We can talk about inside the province if you want to talk about that, but I think you want to talk about border.
Yeah.
And then I think the border thing, this is the panel to listen to. The thing that's interesting when I saw who was on this panel is you have a great array of people to choose from. You need to decide where you want your career to be and where you want the people who represent you to be spending their time. Mm-hmm. If you want a career in Los Angeles, LA representation is a good thing, but if you need to build your career in Toronto first, Canada first, you probably want to be with a Canadian rep first to get that first credit, to get a couple things on your resume, so you'll be more appealing to the U.S. agents when you get down there, or the U.S. market in general. At the same time, you can still sign up straight with the U.S. representation, because that's where your focus is going to be. You have to kind of make these choices about who do you want to communicate with, how much access do you want them to have, how much access do they have to the markets you want to be in, and how much time do you want to spend in the markets you want to have a career in. And all those things come into the conversation. So in Toronto, what we will do is we'll sit down with a client and make a plan. If they're married and they have kids and they want to stay in Toronto, but eventually they want to get to LA, we'll map out something that says, okay, these are the shows we need to really target so that you'll have an impressive resume. A great example years ago would have been Degrassi. Degrassi was a great show to get clients on because Degrassi had a huge fan base among the executives in LA, more so than even Corner Gas did. And so when you had a client on Degrassi, then they would take a meeting with the U.S. exec. Oh, Degrassi, I love Degrassi. And certainly Orphan Black was a great thing for a lot of Canadians to go down to LA. So we would target these kinds of shows and then talk about when we would go down and take meetings with Verve and with APA. And to be clear, Meridian is partnered right now with Verve on clients and with APA on clients and everybody else. So we would also talk about that process of taking you down to LA, meeting with people in LA, trying to find the right partner, the right match for what you wanted to do. Again, the kind of communication you wanted, the kind of access you wanted, all those kinds of things.
Jordan, so tell me a little bit about what Glenn was talking about. You represent a lot of Vancouver locals, a lot of people in the room as well. And what's it like trying to grow those careers here? What are the type of jobs that you're pushing them for initially, and how do they kind of graduate in the Vancouver ecosystem? What does that career path look like from the first time you meet them to the Oscars?
Well, first I'll just say that we do represent, a lot of our clients are based in Toronto and LA. It's just how it works for us, but for those folks in Vancouver, they will be very familiar with the TV movie arena, which is a very kind of first step. You're going to do the acquisition movie that has an even lower budget than Hallmark or Lifetime, and that's often somebody's first long-form sample, their first for-hire sample, their first reference check with somebody that's hired them before, and so those are all good things that we can kind of play off of to get onto the next one. Kids TV, it's some of the only kind of local, small-scale television that we have since Apple has moved in, and Netflix, obviously, is taking up a lot of our time. And as this whole campaign is kind of centered around, at the moment, not hiring Canadians almost exclusively. So it's really looking for those more attainable things that do require residency, which we don't have too many of at the moment, but those are the ones that are realistic, and once you have a few things under your belt, you can start to play off of it to get to the the next one.
Yeah, so tell us a bit more about that, because that's one of the tricky parts. A lot of people go from not being able to be hired to getting their first job and then not wanting to do the work they're being offered, which no one really talks about. You get your first Hallmark, your first Lifetime, your first MOW, your first kid show. What are the strategies you guys use to kind of break to that next level where you're more proud of what you're putting on your reel? If, you know, not that you're not proud of that earlier work, but stuff that's truer to your voice or whatever that is.
We love Hallmark a lot. Just going to say that on the record. But there are, some issues with creative fulfillment in that space. So something we're very aware of is the fact that you get pigeonholed very quickly. So doing multiple in a row over a short span of time with no other work is going to put you on that list. And once you're a TV movie director or a kids TV director, like Zach said, it can be hard to break out of those bubbles. So being aware of that before you accept the job is important. Also making sure that even if it's not a for hire opportunity, you might be able to make something of your own that can show off your personal style a little bit more, things that you can use in combination with the for hire work that's available to you to kind of meet your actual career goals. Unless those career goals are working for Hallmark, in which case you're good to go.
I'll add to that. When we sit down with people, we ask them, where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 10 years? And keep that in mind the whole time you're representing them. If they want to be doing HBO pilots in 10 years, let's make sure that the jobs we're taking are going to lead to that. They don't need to be direct steps, of course. Sometimes you need to work to get paid, whatever it may be. But just keep that long-term goal in mind. And then in conjunction with that, we like to say there's a point where you go from getting the jobs to choosing the jobs. And when you're starting out, you're going to take the Hallmark movie. You're going to take the kids' TV show, whatever it may be, to get in the system, to get credits under your belt, to get reps behind the camera. But as Jordan said, there's a point where you need to start thinking about, is staying in this lane going to get me over here where I want to be in 5 years, in 10 years? There's merit to doing a couple of these things, but you don't want to get known as the person who's doing 10 Hallmark movies over the course of 2 years. If you really want to be doing HBO pilots in 10 years, you need to eventually start passing on stuff and be selective and keep in mind where it is that you want to be long-term in your career. And we find that people who have had successful directing careers who are looking to switch agencies oftentimes come in and we kind of give them that pitch and there's a light bulb that goes off where it's, oh, I never thought of that. My previous representation never brought that up. It was always just work, work, work. And then you stick your head up in 5 years and it's, oh, this is not necessarily where I want to be. So keep in mind what those long-term goals are and make sure that the jobs you're taking are in service of those long-term goals.
Yeah, as Lee said, but we talk about it too, no is one of the most powerful things you can say as an artist. And it's scary, especially when you have an offer on the table and you're like, this is what I've been working for a long, long time. You gotta say yes early, but then saying no allows you to make choices in your career, so you pick your path that you're on, as opposed to someone else dictating it for you.
Yeah, I think it's really critical. Like, I just remember working, and I still work with the same director, Canadian director, actually named Brad Turner, and he had directed a show for J.J. Abrams called Alias. And it was a successful show, and he was offered the opportunity to be a producing director on that show the next year, which meant that he would actually have a voice and a vision on how every episode of the show would be produced, as well as directing his own episodes on the show. A very lucrative opportunity. And at the same time, we were able to get him an offer as a producing director on a show called, 24. Now, and that's a show that we had a package on, which meant that we were getting a fee. I know the word package is a dirty word in LA at the moment with one of our guilds, but it's where you earn a fee, from the license fee of the show, so the agency doesn't commission the client. So, here you have Alias, successful show. Here you have 24, which after the first season was still kind of like on the, the borderline of whether it's going to happen or not. What should he do? And, you got J.J. Abrams. And my advice to the client was pass on Alias and do the 24 job, even though I was not going to earn any money on that deal, and maybe for years to come. Why? because Alias was going to be in its final season of the show. So there was really no upside there. There was no future there. Creatively, the show had probably, you know, timed out. And, you know, on 24, you know, Kiefer Sutherland had just won a Golden Globe Award for Best Actor, and people were starting to look at the show, and it was on the, you know, the cover of some really interesting magazines like Wired, so it was kind of like getting out there in the zeitgeist. And so my feeling was, you know, it's like that Robert Frost, you know, poem, you know, which road in the woods should I take? Take the one less traveled. So I said, go do 24. And I knew I wasn't going to make a dime on him for years, but I also felt that 24 could turn into a monster show. And as it turns out, he won an Emmy Award working on that show. And when he came off of that show, he had multiple offers to do pretty much anything he wanted to do. And so, you know, those are the things I think as an agent, as a manager, you have to look at. You know, again, it's where you want that client's career to be, where do they want to be 5 years down the line, and making some very tough choices, but hopefully good choices.
Awesome. I want to have sort of a general open conversation, but maybe start with Jen and, Jordan and Glenn. Sometimes I combine words. About one of the big questions that Canadians and Vancouverites always ask all the time and think about is, when is the right time to start taking meetings in LA? When it's like, should it be after I've got a short? Should it be after I've done my first MOW? Should it be after I've got an indie? What, like, at what point is the right time to start paying for the trips to go down there and knock on doors and meet people, in your guys' opinion? And anyone else, feel free to chip in.
What do you think, Jordan?
Well, Jen. It's different for everybody. I think there are a lot of factors that can go into that type of thing. I would definitely say you want to have some samples under your belt that an executive can watch. Short, probably premature, unless it's won an award at one of the top first 10 festivals that comes into your head. Similar with indie as well. A lot of the smaller festival awards that you may be racking up do not hold that much weight in LA. And after that, kind of just considering where you are in your career, and is the next step something that's going to require those LA executives to start getting to know your face? Because if it's not, then it's probably better to spend the money on a trip to Toronto or stay in town and meet those people that you might not know yet.
Great. Come to Toronto. So we would say, so we have a couple of things we like. One, we like our clients to generally take a trip to LA with almost no pressure in it. It's a big city. It can be overwhelming on your first trip, especially if you're going down and taking meetings, two or three meetings a day. It can just really get to you. And so if you have a friend down there, go down there for 4 or 5 days. Just drive around the city, get a sense of how much driving there is. Go to Century City and then try to get to Universal in the next 25 minutes. If possible. Just kind of do all of those kinds, just to get a sense of it. We also like to do a kind of generalized trip before we start talking to representation. We'll send them to a couple of production company meetings, a couple of studio meetings, a couple of broadcaster meetings, just so they get a sense of the dynamics that are at play, because in Canada the system is much simpler than it is in LA. And then we would start talking about representation. If they wanted to talk about representation, we'd start talking about that. We want them to meet as many agents as we'll meet them, always. We want them to have choice. And then we'll make a choice. But the final part of that is what you're asking, which is we always like to make sure we're signing up with an agency with an ask. We're at a point in our career where we want something new, and so we need to sign up with this agency to get it. So we'll kind of work that out, and in the meeting we'll talk with that agency about what we think the next step is, what they think the plan would be for all that. And so we take that approach. So it kind of depends on what you want to do, where you want to go, if you're willing to move there, all that. And one thing I'll tell you is it's interesting. Directors are a little bit more interesting because you probably all know a lot of actors. Actors need to move to L.A. Directors can do it a bit more piecemeal. They can go on a couple of trips and start going more and more frequently. Eventually, you're going to want to live there if you want to work there. But you don't necessarily need to pack up your family and go down there to just do it. And we've known a couple of people that have done that, and it has not worked out well for them. The last thing I would say is, and if you can't get the senses, I think you have to do it with a plan. Regardless of what you want to do or where you want to go, you have to have a plan. When you kind of like have a friend who has a friend who introduces you to this person and you sign up for that person, that is almost always a mistake and often does not work out. You want, as I said before, you want to go and meet the agencies and the agents and get a sense of who your options are. So we go with a plan, we work through that plan, and generally that always works out well.
Awesome. I'm curious, I just had a question that came to my mind, which might be a controversial question, but talk to me about, because it's happened to me a few times, where I've moved on from one representation to another. What are maybe the times that are right to sever that relationship, either from the client's perspective or from your guys' perspective? Like, when is it no longer a good relationship that they should maybe think about moving on, or no longer good for you guys? I'm just curious. Sometimes that's a difficult thing that no one really ever talks about. They always talk about how do you get an agent, but they never talk about when is it maybe not a relationship that can continue. Anyone want to take a stab at that hard one? No? Maybe Sean?
I'll put a quick answer.
Yeah.
You know. Everybody
often
knows.
People know but don't do anything. So what is it that
That's a totally different thing, though. Like, you know, if you feel like your agent or your manager is not calling you, or is not reading your material, or is not paying attention, or you don't feel they're submitting, and you have that sense, then you confront them about it. And if they don't have answers, you know you're at the wrong place. You have to move on. In the same way, you know, where, you know, it's the most difficult conversation. I mean, I know this is a BGC thing, but I'll use writers as an example. When you send out a spec pilot and you've sent it to 30 places and no one has picked it up, and your client is on you about sending it to another 10 places, you have to have that conversation. Like, 30 people have said no, let's take a beat and reevaluate where this pilot's at. Those are super difficult conversations, but I think in a good, solid relationship with a client, even if the career is not working, you can have those conversations. And in a relationship that's not working, you can't have those conversations.
Yeah, well,
so you know.
To follow up on that on the good side of it, and then we'll take some questions. What have led to the best relationships, the longest-term relationships that you guys have had with clients? Just each of you quickly talk about maybe what's led to really great things that have been sort of the clients you're most proud of, or the relationships that clients, what have they done that have led to those great relationships for each of you? Maybe Evan, start.
I think it kind of goes back to the first question, which is, what do you look for in a client? And it's somebody that you're passionate about. And there's, if we get one specific thing, somebody I signed less than 2 years ago off of a couple shorts, and it took 6 or 8 months to get her an episode of an anthology series, and she now has 3 features and an overall deal because of that one thing. And that one thing took me 2 months to get approved. She had to come down, she's Canadian, and had to come down to the U.S. and pitch on this project a bunch of times, jump through a bunch of hoops, and we kept doing it, she kept doing it, I believed in her, she believed in the project, and it was something that she had a personal connection to and felt passionate about the material, which just made it that much easier. And for her to come and meet on it, for me to keep selling her and just keep pushing on it until it finally got approved, and the network approved it, and now it's totally blowing up. And just the passion, when it was there, and it was a great relationship, and it continues to be to this day.
Awesome. Glenn Jordan, maybe? What's led to your best?
We only answer questions together now. Share a microphone.
You have one mic.
So it's a bit of a weird answer, but when a client goes through a bad time and they realize you're there for them, the bad times create a bond that lasts for 20 years. Sometimes you have a client that, you know, is just does well and they've been doing well for 7 years, and then it starts to get odd and weird. And it's not that happens every time, but certainly, if you're asking about the relationships I have that are the strongest, I can think back on, you know, their father died in the middle of a production, and we had to pull them off of production, and so, you know, the support that they got through all that, or they didn't work for 2 years, and we didn't give up on them, and we could, you know, those relationships are, you know, we're very proud of, we love those people, and those are the ones that I think feel like the closest.
Awesome. Yeah, and maybe Jordan, like, what are the things the directors that have done that have helped foster that relationship with you?
Yeah, I'd say I think the relationships I enjoy the most and usually are also the most successful are the ones that really approach it as a team. Not obviously we work for you, but we work with you as well. A lot of times there's going to be a job that you got more on your own merits than our work. And there are going to be times where we bend over backwards to do everything we can to make something happen. So I think being aware of that and, you know, really working with your agent is really important.
Awesome. Lee?
Well, yeah, I think there's two things. It's as Evan had said, number one, it's passion. I mean, you know, I've had clients who were basically starting from scratch. They may have had one credit under their belt. I mean, really, just one credit. And I believed totally, unequivocally in them, and I was willing to walk through a brick wall for them. And I would make, like, in one particular case, a writer, I made 100 submissions of the script. I had 99 rejections. It was the 100th, you know, it was the 100th submission that I got the client the job. And then he wasn't hired back. But I still believed in the client, so I kept on going. And ultimately, the client found a niche and started creating shows and started creating some of the biggest shows on television and became like an enormous, you know, gigantic, you know, success. So there's the passion in it. And the other part of it is, you know, what's going to maintain the longevity over time is a sense of partnership, you know, that you and your client are really in sync with one another and what they want to do and what are the things that they're burning to say and that you are willing to, that you share, you know, the same creative, you know, focus as that particular client. Because there are going to be times, like in any relationship, right? In any relationship, there are going to be, you know, conflicts from time to time. I want to do this. Well, I don't think that's such a great idea that you want to do it. But it doesn't really matter because you're there to be their advocate, right? And so it's not what I think or what I want to do. I can advise somebody, but I am there to make their dreams a reality. And so part of it is like really being in touch with the emotional rhythms of the artists that you're working with. And I think that, like any relationship, whether it's personal or professional, will stand the course of time.
Awesome. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate kind of what everyone here said, it's ultimately a relationship. So you got to, you know, just check in. And I think as long as you guys see eye to eye, you can have difficult conversations. You have great conversations, wins, loses. That helps feed longevity. And then also just the drive. Like, I love clients that just because they're represented or they had, you know, one thing under their belt or one win, that they're still just as hungry the next day, if not even hungrier.
Great. We have time for just maybe one or two questions. Anyone throw up your hands? First one, yeah.
Hi, my name's Kay. This question is mostly, I guess, for Jordan and Glenn, but anyone can answer. We go by Jen.
It's never going away.
So I'm an aspiring director, but I want to take a more hands-on approach to advancing my career. And say if I have a project under my belt that I'm proud of but didn't gain any traction in the festival circuit, would you still consider meeting with someone like me just to talk strategy and just to put a name to a face and see personality-wise? Or do you really wait to see a person vetted by the festival world first before you consider even meeting with them?
I mean, I take those meetings all the time, but often they end in, please go do these things and keep in touch.
Yeah, it's not. We're not. The best festivals are not the only place we find clients. We'd want to see the film, and if we had, I mean, you're here and you're meeting us, and now you can email us and, you know, whatever. but we'd also go from that, and the meeting would be very key in that case. Not just what you're trying to get from us, but what we're also learning about you, and even your own take on your short. You know, if you know, we would probably say, so what do you think about your short? And if you say, I don't really think I conveyed that they fell in love. And we go, bingo, that's exactly what's wrong. So you know what you're doing wrong. Great. And then we'd give you, but she says, is, well, I don't know, Jordan, I guess, said, we would talk about what you should do next and what the next steps would be. But we are very engaged as an agent. We love finding talent. That is, I mean, as much as we'd like to be an industry leader, we also love to find those emerging screenwriters, those emerging directors, those emerging talents, and be a part of that process, because there's no greater thrill in the world for an agent, honestly, than to call someone and say, we got you a gig. It's fantastic, so we love to participate in that.
Also, call yourself a director, not an aspiring director. You've already directed.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
today.
Yes, we. We do a lot of work at the Just Watch Us on the background, telling them you're not trying to be a director. You are a director. You are. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up now because some of our panelists got to run. But thank you so much. These people are accessible. You can reach out. The agents exist. And please keep watching Just Watch Us and what we're up to. And go out there and convince them you're worth getting jobs. So thank you, everyone.